Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is Security Considerations and Payment Card Industry Compliance. Today's presenter is Mike Arrington. Mike was a student intern with the IBM WebSphere Commerce Support Team for 2 years before joining full-time in June 2011. In this role, he supports clients worldwide with a focus on security, runtime, and store-based issues, as well as working on the ISA data collection utilities. At this point in time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Mike.
Thanks, Joseph. So today I'm going to talk about security considerations in the payment card industry, or PCI compliance, and how it relates to WebSphere Commerce version 7. Can we go into slide 2, please? So I just want to start off with a quick overview of what I'm going to be talking about. I'll start off with the PCI security standards, what they are and how they apply to WebSphere Commerce. Then I'm going to talk briefly about the Payment Application Data Security Standards, or the PADSS, and also how this applies to WebSphere Commerce. Following that, we're going to take a look at each PCI requirement, all 12 of them. I'm going to talk about each one and how they relate to WebSphere Commerce. And also we're going to take a closer look at some of the key features and utilities included in WebSphere Commerce to help with meeting PCI requirements. After that, I'm going to finish off with more information on how you can enhance just the overall site security. And at the end of the presentation, we'll have time for questions. And so with that, can we move on to slide 3, please? So PCI is the payment card industry. And this is a group of organizations commonly called the PCI Security Standards Council, or PCI-SSC. And this group is the major payment brands, which includes companies such as Amex, Discover, MasterCard, and Visa. What they've done is they've gone ahead and made a set of standards called the Data Security Standards. And these lay out a consistent set of measures that should be put in place to protect your cardholders and, of course, the cardholder data. It's been broken down into 12 separate requirements, and then each requirement has a number of sub-requirements on how security should be implemented on your site. And so WebSphere Commerce version 7 contains a number of features to help assist with application security and to help with meeting those PCI requirements. I should point out here that some requirements do extend beyond the scope of software and extend beyond WebSphere Commerce. I still will mention them as we go through the presentation, but it's important to refer back to the official PCI documentation for more details on these. Can we go into slide 4, please? So this image just lays out sort of the variety of standards that have been developed by PCI and how they apply to different parts of the application, parts of the infrastructure in the payment application. And so you start off on the left with PCI-PED, which is the PCI PIN entry device standards. And so these apply to things such as your debit card and credit card machine that you have access to at your physical store. Obviously, these are not applicable to WebSphere Commerce, as we don't implement any features regarding PIN entry devices. The next square, next block on your right, is the PCI-PADSS. As mentioned, this is the Payment Application Data Security Standards, and so these apply to the development of payment applications to ensure that the correct handling of cardholder data, such as the CVV code, magstripe, etc. And so in our case, this is what WebSphere Commerce applies to as a software product, and this is what we get tested against when the product was developed. I'll come back to this in a couple of slides on how it applies to WebSphere Commerce. On the next block, you see the PCI-DSS. And so this is the standard that applies to the merchants who are actually running the application. And so in our case, this would be you as the site administrators, and this thing has the standards that you must apply to keep your site secure and keep you compliant with PCI. Can we move on to slide 5, please? And so this is the PCI requirements. On the left, you can see, as I already mentioned, the MSSC founders. These are the companies that are involved in the actual organization of PCI. And on the right, we can see the breakdown of the PCI requirements. PCI has been broken down into 5 main goals, and each goal is broken down into a number of requirements, being 12 in total. As I mentioned, these 12 requirements can get further broken down into sub-requirements to help clarify and expand where it's needed, so you can meet each requirement as a whole. I won't go over each of these individually right now, as that's what we'll get into in the main part of the presentation. I thought to point here and what they are. Can we move on to slide 7, please? And so as I mentioned just a couple of slides ago, there's the PADSS standards. And so this chart shows the results of our PADSS audit that Western Commerce was given by a DSS auditor. As we can see at the bottom, Western Commerce met all of the requirements, and we achieved a score of 1%. And so this shows that we've done our part to secure Western Commerce. These standards include things such as making sure that password features have secure implementations, things such as application activities being logged, and more features similar to that. So once we've met these requirements, the next step is to make sure that the actual implementation or the instance of Western Commerce is secure. And that's what PCI DSS standards apply to. And so can we move on to slide 8, please? And so this is the first goal, which is to build and maintain a secure network. The first requirement of this is to install and maintain a firewall configuration to protect cardholder data. And so one important thing to mention here is that PCI requires you have an N-tier architecture. In most cases with Western Commerce, this means having a 3-tier architecture, meaning that each server can only handle one primary function, such as your web server, your application, your database, but each be housed in a separate system or a separate virtual machine if you're running in that sort of scenario. Also, firewalls should be installed, configured, and really monitored at sort of every entry point to your network. This includes between your internal networks and external networks, as well as any internal networks that may be accessible by a third party or by a team member's system. This includes things such as they access the system through mobile devices or laptops. You should have extra firewall essential security within those areas. As well, cardholder data, which is mostly your database, must be stored on a system that's only accessible through an internal network zone, and it cannot have access directly to the internet. And this is, again, just to help protect and put that extra layer of security in between the extra internet and the most important part of the data, which is your cardholder information. Can we go on to slide 9, please? And so continuing with the same goal of building and maintaining a secure network, requirement 2 is that you cannot use vendor-supplied defaults and passwords and other security parameters. These must be changed once the software is being installed. What should Commerce help implement this? By first of all forcing administration passwords to be changed immediately after installation. You can see this easily put in place when you go into a tool such as Accelerator or Management Center for the first time. It immediately asks you to change your password and update it with a new value. Also, defaults for the user names should be changed. Defaults such as commonly used are WCSAdmin and DB2. These should not be used in your production system, and you should be changing them during installation. Another thing to point out is that you should be disabling any unneeded operating system services and ports, and you can sort of extend this idea into Webster Commerce, and that unnecessary components can also be disabled, and they should be disabled so that you don't allow potential vulnerabilities because those components are enabled, but you're not using them, so you may not be monitoring them as regularly. These components can often be disabled through the admin console, so it's recommended to go and take a look at that and see if there's anything you're not using that could be disabled. As well, the PCI requirements state that all admin access, not done through a console, should be encrypted. And so Western Commerce implements this by ensuring that all admin consoles, such as the organization administration console, the management center, and accelerator, these can only be accessed through SSL over that HTTPS protocol. So again, adding an extra layer of security to meet PCI compliance. As well, some security policies can be configured to a further extent. So I'll go into this in a bit more detail now. If we move to slide 10, please. I'm just going to take a closer look at some of the authentication policies that Western Commerce implements. And these policies provide a set of rules that must be met during both authentication and authorization. For example, the first one is the account lockup policy. This is used to disable user accounts if the software feels that there are malicious actions being launched against it. Those can mean things such as too many invalid attempts are being made at trying to log into the same account, and in this case, that account gets locked completely and must be re-enabled by an administrator. Also, you can introduce a delay after each failed login attempt, so that this helps mitigate the risk of people trying to randomly guess passwords time after time. That delay makes it a much harder challenge. Also, WebSecurity implements a password policy, which defines a list of rules that passwords must meet to be valid. Those include things such as make sure that passwords have a minimum length, make sure that they expire after a certain time, and that there's a certain set of allowed and required characters that each password must have to be a valid password. These are just two of the important policies. There are a number of other ones that exist in Western Commerce, such as the password protected commands is another important one. So it's recommended to go back and take a look at these in more detail and see how they apply to your system. Can we move to slide 11, please? And so we're on to the second goal now, which is to protect cardholder data. The third requirement states simply they must protect stored cardholder data. The first thing to do is to make sure that all sensitive data is encrypted. And this is already done automatically by Western Commerce using a triple DS algorithm with a 128-bit key. This key is generated based on the seed value, which is your merchant key, which is either going to be a 32 or a 16 hexadecimal number. Western Commerce helps do all of this through the use of the key locator framework, which allows your merchant key and also the payment instance password to be split into files, making it harder to access. I'll talk about this in just a minute. As well as PCI requirements, it states that things such as the credit card number cannot be displayed in full. In this case, only that four digits are displayed in the sample storefront. And also, data retention is important, making sure that things such as the DB Queen utilities run at a regular basis to ensure that old cardholder data is not kept longer than is needed. For when you go to upgrade your system and upgrade new hardware, you should be running tools such as either S-Delete or SRM to ensure that the data is permanently disposed of and cannot be accessed at a later time. Can we go on to slide 12, please? We're going to take a closer look at the key locator framework I just mentioned. What this does is it allows merchant keys to be split, allowing the key to be stored in two separate locations, and each half can be stored on something such as removable media, and then in possession of two separate key custodians. What this does is it allows many additional layers of security, such as the physical security that's being stored on an external device. You can then implement operating system security through the use of file permissions and having separate user IDs for each half of the user key of the merchant key, as well as having third-party file monitoring to check for file consistency and integrity and make sure it's not being accessed by other users. Key locator framework also supports what's called dual key control, meaning that you can have a second key called the key encryption key, which is used to then encrypt the value of the stored merchant key. And then this file, again, will be protected in the same way as before, where it has a separate key custodian and also has file permissions, etc. This KLS, as I mentioned, can be applied to both the merchant key and payment system password out of the box, and you could extend it to other uses as needed, but it should cover most scenarios in terms of encryption. Can we move on to slide 13, please? And so now you know about the KLF and how it works and how your merchant key sort of fits in the situation. But how does it all, where does it come together? I mean, where's the security, where's the additional layer of security there? And so the thing is that PCI requires that your merchant key be changed at least annually. Changing these keys means that the data that's been stored with a previous key must be decrypted and then re-encrypted with a new key, but this data is still valid and is not lost when you change merchant keys. That's what the migrate encrypted info utility comes into play. What it does is it takes the old keys and it takes the new keys provided by KLS. So you have your two key custodians who both provide their key to the migrate encrypted info utility. And then what it'll do is it'll run in either an offline mode or an online mode, depending on if you want to keep the store open or not. And what it does is it goes through all of the data that's been encrypted. It will decrypt it with the previous key, re-encrypt it with a new key, and then save the new key back into the two separate files, and you give that again to your two key custodians. Out of the box, this runs on data such as your users, your orders, and your payment data. Anything that's being encrypted needs that additional layer of security. But as well, additional database tables can be configured if it's needed, if you've made customizations to the product that require more security involved. Can we go on to slide 14, please? And so we're still on the protect cardholder data goal. And requirement four is that you must encrypt the transmission of cardholder data across open and public networks. This is a pretty straightforward requirement, And WebSphere Commerce means that all requests involve this sensitive information, things such as when you're going through checkout flow and adding your payment data, as well as using the administration tools. This requires that these requests be made over SSL or through HTTPS protocol, and the needs are protected that way. Again, it's pretty straightforward requirements in terms of how it's implemented with WebSphere Commerce. So that's pretty much all we have for this. Can we move on to slide 15, please? And so now we're on to the third goal, which is to maintain a vulnerability management program. Requirement 5 states that you must use and regularly update antivirus software. Of course, this is beyond the scope of WebSphere Commerce. We can't really implement antivirus software. But what it boils down to is ensuring that you have the software installed, it's regularly updated and maintained on all machines that access the network, which hosts your e-commerce application. So again, this includes, as I mentioned, things such as mobile devices and laptops should be including this antivirus software, so that things can't sneak in those ways you might not think of as just sort of the main entry points to your application. One thing to point out here is that during the installation of WebSphere Commerce, you may be required to temporarily disable antivirus so that installation can complete. But of course, once it's finished, you should go back and re-enable this so that it's again running and you stay within the PCI compliance rules. Can we move on to slide 16, please? And so still within the maintaining vulnerability management program goal, we're at requirement 6, which states that you must develop and maintain secure systems and applications. And so this is mostly surrounding your customization. Make sure that things you add to the application don't compromise security. Especially one thing to look for is when you're working with cardholder data. If you're adding new tables to the database to store cardholder data, or if you're adding new cookies to store, possibly store cardholder data, make sure these meet PCI requirements, things such as that the credit card CVV code is not stored, and that's the only stored temporarily. Another thing is that you should stay up to date with security alerts. One quick and easy way to do this is by keeping up to date with the ISS, or the IBM Security Systems webpage. What this does is it lists vulnerabilities as they're found by IBM, and it gets updated quite regularly. As well, WebSphere Commerce and also WebSphere Application Server, both of our teams do publish flashes as vulnerabilities are found that relate to our product. And so if you're signed up to get updates from either product, you should get these flashes when new security vulnerabilities are found and how to mitigate the risk by either installing a fix or having some other workaround in place. Another good resource you should be familiar with is the OWASP website. OWASP is the Open Web Application Security Project. This website has many resources. It contains things such as various attacks, vulnerabilities, and also best practices on how to help with application security. I'll talk about OWASP again in a few slides, as it does come up again, as it does provide many useful resources in terms of web application security. Can we go on to slide 17, please? And so now we're on to the fourth goal, which is to implement strong access control measures. Requirement 7 is to restrict access to cardholder data on a business need-to-know basis. Obviously, I think access control is a pretty well-known feature of WebSphere Commerce. What it does is it allows privileged users to be given the least amount of privileges needed for their job responsibilities, which basically means that different levels, you can have different levels of administrative users, and each have access only to those features and the functionality that they need to complete their business job. By default, also new users are sort of assigned a default deny all setting. Basic users can't do anything without being given that additional level of privileges, which must be assigned by another administrative user, which meets PCI requirements. I'm just going to talk more about access control. Can we go to slide 18, please? And so as I've mentioned, what access control does is it allows you to either allow or deny a user to either specific resources or actions or commands. And so access control can be broken down into four basic elements. You can have users, actions, resources, and relationships, along with two types of access control. You can either have access control at the command level or at the resource level. Command level access control is used to help define which roles can execute what type of commands. You can think of an example as being all sellers can execute seller commands, where sellers is your role or your users, and seller commands is your resources. So you can limit which users can access which resources. Then if you have a policy matches that, you can then go into the resource level access control to provide another additional layer of checking and make sure that the access can be granted finally to the user. And so the resource level defines which users are allowed to execute which commands on a specific resource, such as only display data from the order you created, where that you can only, the actions being that you can only display the data, and then the order that you created is the resource. So it's the limit that you can't view other people's orders, as that's not part of your resource. You're not allowed to do that as a basic user. And so overall, you can see how Web3 Commerce and how the implementation of access control can be used to meet those PCI requirements, ensuring that users can be granted only the functions that they need as per their business. Obviously, access control is a much larger subject, much larger topic that I can go into more detail in this presentation. So I always recommend you go and review this more closely with a number of other resources that we have through the Info Center and other developer works and TechNode articles. Can we go on to slide 19, please? So continuing on the same goal, we're at requirement 9, which is to assign a unique ID to each person with computer access. From a Web3 Commerce standpoint, it's pretty easy to see that new users are automatically given a unique ID when they register. So that meets the first basic requirement. Further to that, you can take this more than just a software standpoint of what in terms of Web3 Commerce. By making sure that each individual who uses and accesses the system is using their own separate login ID. If you have multiple team members who should have access to different administrative roles, administrative functions, each user should not be sharing one single ID. Each user should be having their own separate ID so you can track which users are accessing which resources and which commands. And again, this goes back to access control of being able to allow those commands and resources on an as-needed basis. And of course, all users are required to authenticate with the password, which is required by PCI. And again, you can take this back to the password policy rules, that you can set the security level for passwords and make sure they meet certain requirements so that they're a valid password before they can be used. Can we move on to slide 20, please? And so now into requirement 9, which is to restrict physical access to cardholder data. Obviously, this as well is sort of beyond the scope of Web3 Commerce. We can't help you implement physical access to a software product. But what it comes down to is that PCI requirements mentioned that this is regarding implementing entry control and also limiting access to the system which contains your cardholder data, their database. So it's to make sure that users can't just walk in and steal the computer with all the cardholder data. You should be having rules to prevent that from happening. Can we move on to slide 21, please? And so now we're at the last goal, which is to regularly monitor and test networks. The first requirement for this is requirement 10, which is that you must track and monitor all access to the network resources and the cardholder data. So this means that you should establish a number of processes and policies to track which individuals are going in to access the system and to access certain components and data. Web3 Commerce helps do this by implementing audit trails, which can be added for each command which is executed, and this is then accessed through the business auditing framework, which I'll talk about in just a moment. Before I get to that, the other thing to point out with regards to this requirement is you should be regularly reviewing your HTTP server logs as well as your application logs. Either do it manually or probably for things such as your HTTP server logs, you'd like to use some sort of third-party monitoring tool to make this process easier. And you're checking for possible vulnerabilities any systems by reviewing the logs on a regular basis. Can we move on to slide 22, please? And so here's the business auditing framework. And what it does is that it captures the business logic that goes on sort of behind the scenes during the execution of Web3 Commerce functions. For example, a couple that are required by PCI to be logged is you're always going to be logging the access to cardholder data whenever a user accesses that data, as well as you're going to always be logging the actions that are performed by the administrative users. And so the business logging framework, what it does is that after each execution of one of these commands, it logs a number of details, such as the command that was called, what the request and response were, and things such as the command context. With all this data being generated, you can then create reports based either on the user ID or the command type. So this allows you to take a quick look and review these objects, look and see if there's certain user IDs or possibly certain commands that are being called, and look for patterns that may be pointing to some sort of malicious action. Either user IDs are performing or trying to perform actions they shouldn't, or user IDs are constantly being tried and logged into and constantly failing. You're just trying to find those patterns and make sure that your site is meeting the security requirements. Can we move on to slide 23, please? And so requirement 11 is to regularly test your security systems. Again, this one also as well goes beyond the scope of Web3 Commerce, but what it comes down to is testing your security systems by running regularly vulnerability scans. And you'll be looking for things that do crop up over time, such as possibly new cross-site scripting, rules may need to be added, or other things you might want to look out for and then add to the software product or to your application instance. To go along with this, you should be deploying file monitoring tools. Check for consistency among sort of the important files. Those can include files such as your .dev server or your instance XML file, as these files should not be changed by just anyone. They should be tested and regularly monitored to see when they're being changed and correct. Make sure that the correct users are changing these files. We want to slide 24, please. And so finally, the last requirements, requirement 12, this is to maintain a policy that addresses information security for employees and contractors. Again, this one falls beyond the scope of Web3 Commerce, but it centers around developing procedures and policies that relate to your site security. Make sure these are regularly reviewed. Make sure someone on your team has ownership of these files or these documents to ensure that they are kept up to date and that they are being followed. Now that you've gone through all of your requirements, you've met everything, your site should be ready for PCI auditing and probably PCI compliance. The thing is, security doesn't stop just with PCI compliance. There's a number of other ways to further enhance your site security, and I'm going to talk about six of them in general, and six of them specifically, as they are more important. They do come up more frequently. Can we go on to slide 25, please? So the first one is cross-site scripting. What cross-site scripting does is that it allows client-side scripting, which is commonly JavaScript, be injected and then executed on other web pages. So an example of this is that you can think of where a user clicks a link going from site A to site B. Within that link, there's a parameter which executes or which includes JavaScript. This parameter is then read by site B when they access the site, and the code gets executed. Means it's not properly escaped. This code will be doing something very not harmful, probably such as something just displaying a window alert or a pop-up, all it does is doing something such as doing a session cookie, which would then allow the user who gave the URL to then steal a session cookie and log into that site as the user who followed the link. I've shown a brief screenshot here of what it could look like. You can see it looks like your common Web3 Commerce URL. You can see the catalog ID, the language ID, and store ID parameters being sent into the URL. But as well, there's this other parameter called param1, and it includes a little script which just says window.alert, and it's going to show a pop-up on the site if the JSP that's being sent to does not escape this string. And so what cross-site scripting protection does is it allows you to define specific URL parameters and strings that are to be rejected when these requests come in. And so then if the URL contains these strings, the user is forwarded to a separate page or to an error page saying that they follow a bad link. Cross-site scripting protection is enabled through WSServer.xml and provides a number of defaults out of the box, things such as checking for the script tags, which I used in my example. And so these defaults are a good start to cross-site scripting protection, but you should go further than this. As you run things such as your vulnerability scans, you may find that there are other possible scripts or other possible tags on a string that should be added to this list. So it does allow for that customization as needed. Also, you could run into problems with cross-site scripting in regards to some of the Web3 Commerce tooling, specifically tools such as Management Center or Accelerator, which do require at times some parameters to be allowed, which may be deemed dangerous in regular scenarios. In this case, you can disable cross-site scripting protection on either a per-command or per-module basis. One further note here is when you're doing your customizations to other to things such as the JSPs, you should be using things such as the JSTLCOUT tag, as this will automatically take the URL parameter being passed into the COUT tag and will escape all the special characters so that code can't be executed when that parameter is being displayed. As well, I mentioned earlier the OWASP website. You should go back and visit them as they have something called the XSS guidelines, or XSS cross-site scripting. And these guidelines are a number of rules and sort of recommendations that help follow, you're recommended to follow to help meet certain cross-site scripting guidelines, ensure that your site is secure against those vulnerabilities. As well, I'll also include something called the ES API, or Enterprise Security API. What this is it's a Java library, also available for other languages, but in terms of Western Commerce, it's a Java library that you can include in your project, and it includes a number of security functions, things such as escaping parameters before they're used, and other useful security functions. So it's a good library to take a look at if you want to sort of go take that extra step in enhancing site security. Can we go on to slide 27, please? So URL redirect filtering. URL redirection filtering is when a user follows one link, which then has the functionality to redirect to another site. These are generally used in something such as a phishing attack, where in this example, the user is given a link to a website called notprotected.com. It has this redirect parameter, which will redirect to the site that's providing this parameter. In this case, it's not protected, but it's actually de.com. However, the user could follow this link and end up at this wrong site without noticing the change. And if the site looks very similar, then you have the possibility of having a phishing attempt, where this new site is trying to steal the user information and then use it at a later time. Western Commerce helps mitigate this risk by allowing you to configure a list of allowed hosts and allowed domains, meaning that URLs can be redirected to these domains, but if they're not listed, then the redirection does not go forward and the user is not redirected. Again, this can be configured on a per-module basis, but you could run into the scenario where possibly things such as your management center is on a different host or different domain, but you want it to be allowed to redirect to your main site. So you can do things such as store preview and whatnot. In this case, you want to disable URL redirect filtering on those tools possibly, but on your main site, it is a good thing to configure and set up for those redirect sites, like only the ones that you want to be allowed through. Again, this is also configured in your WCServer.xml. Can we go on to slide 28, please? In summary, access logging. What this does is, Western Commerce implements this, and it can be configured to either log all requests or only log those that fail access control checking. This allows you as the administrator to go back and review these commands that have either failed or just all commands and try and find patterns that might point to some sort of security threat, which might not be easily noticeable through your regular log review, as those regular logs can fill up so quickly with other data. Access logging gives you that quick look at, you know, the who, what, where, and when. You can see who the user was that sent the request, also what was the command that was run and what was the result of the access control checking that was done on it. You get the where by seeing which store the request was sent to and what the resource was it was asking for, as well you can see when the attack happened or when the command was called, and try and use those to sort of build that pattern and see if there's anything showing up that looks like a possible vulnerability. Access logging is turned on through the Configuration Manager by enabling the Access Logging Events Listener component, and then you can review the logs at a later time. We go on to slide 29, please. So changing your session encryption key, so I've already talked about the immersion key and your key encryption key, and so to add to this list of the keys you have is your session encryption key. This key is used to encrypt the external facing data, so in most cases it would be things such as cookies, and most importantly, probably your WC authentication cookie, which stores when a user is logged into your site and keeps track of their session as they're logged in through SSL pages. Unlike the other keys, such as the merchant key, this key is not manually defined. It's generated automatically through the use of an ANT script, and it's updated by Western Commerce when you run this ANT script. It's recommended that this be updated at the same time as the merchant key, which PCI states should be done at least annually. And it's a good idea to change this on a regular basis so that things such as if cookies do get stolen, they're not valid for a very long period of time. They will not be valid once your session encryption key is changed. Can we go into slide 30, please? And so finally, I just have some tips on sort of your coding best practices and things to look out for when you are making customizations to the product. The first is obviously cross-site scripting prevention. I mentioned this earlier, but again, you should be using those cout tags when you're taking strings that are supplied by the user or taking data supplied by the user. Make sure that it is being escaped properly. As well, I mentioned earlier about the OWASP ASPI, ES API, which provides these functions for you if you don't want to use the Java, the JSTLC tags. As well, SQL injection is another common form of attacks against web applications. You can help avoid this in your customizations by doing input validation, and again, same as before, making sure that those input parameters are being properly encoded and being desanitized for those special characters and for running possible script commands. As well, if you're adding sensitive data into the log, you should be configuring the WC masking attributes.xml to make sure that this data is not being output in full plain text. This will cause the data to be masked as its output, so it can't be reviewed at a later time, and you can find things such as sensitive data, such as credit card numbers, and so on. As well, you should be using the HTTPS property in the struts configuration. I mentioned earlier about CSRF and how it's configured through struts. The HTTPS property is similar, and it forces requests to these commands to be sent over SSL. And with that, can we go on to slide 31, please? And so in summary, Western Commerce handles sensitive data. We're getting data such as addresses, credit cards, and so on. And this data is very important, not just to us as site administrators, but of course to the customers who are trusting you with this data and want me to be sure that you're keeping it in a safe and secure manner. Compliance with PCI DSS can be very beneficial. It builds trust with not just your customers, but also with other businesses, such as payment processors and so on. They may be looking for this compliance if they want to do this business with you. As well, I mean, I've covered quite a lot here, going over each requirement of PCI, as well as some of the other steps you can take to further enhance security. It is a lot to take in at once, and it can be confusing because of how much there is to look out for. But the thing is, Western Commerce has tried to go and simplify turning on these settings and simplify the configuration of them. So we have to try to go that extra mile, as well as making sure that some of these are defaults, such as the cross-site scripting and the password policies enabled by default. As I've mentioned through this presentation, some of these requirements do fall sort of outside of that scope of Western Commerce. It's more than we can handle with just a software application, and it involves things such as your overall physical site security. And so we do recommend that you go back and carefully review the documents, the Edge's official PCI documentation, review each requirement and sub-requirements, take a look at each one in more detail, and find out how it applies specifically to your site and your application. Coming on to 532, please. And so I've included here just a few additional resources. First one is the Info Center, which this link points directly to the page on PCI security and how it's implemented. From this page, you should be able to find links to the other features I mentioned, things such as the business auditing framework, cross-site scripting rules, and so on. So it's a good place to start when you're working in site security. The second link is the PCI Security Council's website. And from here, you can go to the site and get access to that PCI documentation to read more about it and find out what's needed to meet PCI compliance. The third site is the OWASP, which I mentioned is the Open Web Application Security Project. This is where you can find those things such as the ESAPI and the cross-site scripting guidelines, as well as other information on possible attack vulnerabilities and other guidelines. And finally, the IBM Internet Security Systems. As I mentioned, this is where you'll find updates from IBM on vulnerabilities that we find that may apply to our product. So it's a good place to keep an update on and make sure you know where it is and how to get to it. Make sure you're staying up to date on those vulnerabilities as they're found. And so with that, I'll pass it back to Joseph.
Thank you, Mike, for a great presentation. At this point in time, Jackie, we would like to open the line for questions.
We have no questions over the phone.
Thank you, Jackie. And I have our first question here. The question is, can you talk about how WebSphere Commerce protects against SQL injection attacks?
Sure. So, I mean, by default, the SQL queries that are run by Western Commerce out of the box are all, every parameter that's being sent in through customer input somehow is desanitized and cleaned before it's being sent off to be queried. Past that, as I mentioned, if you're adding in additional queries, you should be making sure that these are being escaped or any input provided by the customer is being escaped. Out of the box, though, we should be secure against some SQL injection attacks. Does that answer the question? Hopefully.
Thank you, Mike. Okay, looks like we don't have any questions over the web conference. Jackie, can we open the lines up one more time to see if we have any questions over the telephone?
Certainly. Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please dial star 1 now.
Sure. So if we go back to slide 26, please bring a question from Divya. So Divya, this is how WebCommerce influenced cross-site request forgery. And so maybe this slide didn't get brought up, but CSFR attacks, what it does is it causes the user to execute commands they don't intend to by using the customer's current session. And so what happens is if the user is on one site, for example, you know, trustedsite.com, and then they're given a session cookie from this website. They then go back and browse another website, csrf.com, and they follow a link pointing to the original site. It points to a specific command, such as the order item add command. What happens is the session cookie is still valid, and so this command will execute without any problems or any question, and this could happen through the user's knowledge. The CSFR protection is handled through struts by adding in an off-token parameter. What happens is this off-token is required by the command that's being run, and it must be a valid off-token, which gets provided by the JSP that invokes the action. So I've given a brief example at the bottom. You say I've added in a CSRF-protected property to the user registration update command. What this means is that on the page that's calling user registration update command, I should be adding in a hidden input called with the name of off-token, and then this value will be generated by WebCommerce on the JSP and gets sent in the request to user registration update command. The off-token gets checked, make sure it's a valid token before the request can be processed.
There were no questions on the phone.
Thank you, Jackie. So at this point in time, we will conclude the presentation.